1927. By a fountain of waters in the wilderness. That this signifies natural truth that had not as yet attained to life is evident from the signification of a fountain of waters as being truth, and from the signification of the wilderness as being that which as yet has but little vitality. Such also is the signification of this term in the internal sense in Luke, where the Lord is treated of. The child grew and waxed strong in spirit, and was in the wilderness until the day of his showing unto Israel. 1:80. That a fountain of waters and the wilderness signify these things may be confirmed by very many passages from the Word. But as mention is very often made of fountains in what follows, and also of the wilderness, where their signification is the same as here, of the Lord's divine mercy, the proof will there be given. What it is for truth not yet to have attained to life will be evident from what is to be said presently. 1928. By the fountain in the way to Shur. That this signifies that that truth was from those things which proceed from scientifics is evident from the signification of a fountain, also of a way, and likewise of Shur. A fountain, as before said, signifies truth. A way signifies that which leads to truth and which proceeds from truth, as before shown, number 627. But Shur signifies what is scientific, as is still, as it were, in the wilderness, that is, which has not yet attained to life. Truths that come from scientifics are said to attain to life when they join or associate themselves with the truths into which flows the celestial of love, for the very life of truth comes thence. There are conjunctions of actual things, thus of truths, like those of the societies in heaven, to which also they correspond, for a man as to his interiors is a kind of little heaven. The actual things or truths that have not been conjoined in accordance with the form of the celestial societies have not yet attained to life. For before this, the celestial of love from the Lord cannot flow in with adaptation. They first receive life when the form is similar on both sides, or when the man's little heaven is a correspondent image of the grand heaven. Previous to this, no one can be called a celestial man. The Lord, who was to govern the universal heaven from himself, did, when in the world, reduce the truths and goods in his external man, or in his human essence, into such order. But as he perceived that his rational that was first conceived was not of this character, as said above at verses 4 and 5, he thought out the cause, and perceived that the natural truths that sprung from scientifics had not as yet attained to life, that is, were not as yet reduced into that celestial order. And besides, the truths of faith have no life at all, unless the man lives in charity. For all the truths of faith flow from charity, and are in charity. And when they are in charity and from charity, then they have life. In charity there is life, but never in truths apart from charity. That Shur signifies what is scientific that has not yet attained to life is evident from its meaning. For Shur was a wilderness not far from the Red Sea, thus towards Egypt, as is evident in Moses. Moses made Israel to journey from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur. And they went 3 days in the wilderness, and found no water. Exodus 15, verse 22. That it was towards Egypt is evident also in Moses, where the posterity of Ishmael are spoken of. They dwelt from Havilah unto Shur, that is, toward the faces of Egypt. Genesis 25, verse 18. Also in Samuel, Saul smote Amalek from Havilah, as thou comest to Shur, that is, toward the faces of Egypt. First book of Samuel, 15, verse 7. And again, David made a raid against the Geshurite, and the Gizrite, and the Amalekite, for they were the inhabitants of the land who were of old, as thou goest to Shur, even to the land of Egypt. First book of Samuel, 27, verse 8. From these passages it may be seen that by Shur is signified the first scientific, and in fact such as is still in the wilderness, or that is not as yet conjoined with the rest in accordance with the order of celestial association. For by Egypt, before which it was, is signified science in every sense, as before shown, number 1164, 1165, 1186, 1462. That these things are signified by the angel of Yahuwah finding Hagar at a fountain of waters in the wilderness, at the fountain in the way to Shur, can by no means appear from the literal sense, and the less so when it is seen that it is historical. For this sense seems very remote from signifying such things. But still, this is the meaning that comes into the ideas of the angels when these things are read by man. For the angels have no idea of Hagar, nor of a fountain of waters, nor of a wilderness, nor of a way, nor of Shur. None of these things reach them, but perish at the first threshold. But what is signified by Hagar, by a fountain, by a wilderness, by a way, and by Shur, they understand, and thereby form celestial ideas, and in this way they perceive the Lord's word, for the internal sense is the word to them. 1930, verse 8. And he said, Hagar, Sarai's handmaid, whence comest thou, and whither goest thou? And she said, From the face of Sarai my mistress am I fleeing. He said, Hagar, Sarai's handmaid, signifies information. Whence comest thou, and whither goest thou? Signifies respecting the state. And she said, From the face of Sarai my mistress am I fleeing. Signifies response and indignation. 1931. He said, Hagar, Sarai's handmaid. That this signifies information is evident from the series. For Hagar is addressed by the angel as if he were to be informed. It is a common thing in the word for Yahuwah to question a man, and for men to reply, although Yahuwah knew all before, not only what is done, but also the causes and the ends, and thus all the least and inmost things. But as a man is not aware of this, and believes that no one can possibly know what he does in secret when no one sees it, and still less what he thinks, therefore the matter takes place according to his belief. But still it is really true that even ordinary spirits perceive a man's thoughts better than the man himself does. angelic spirits, still more interior things of his thoughts, and angels, things even more interior, namely the causes and the ends, of which the man knows but little. It has been given me to know this by much and continual experience, lasting many years. As spirits and angels perceive these things, what must be the case with the Lord or Yahuwah, who is infinite, and who gives to all their ability to perceive? 1932. Whence comest thou, and whither goest thou? That this signifies information respecting the state is evident from the words themselves. 1933. And she said, From the face of Sarai my mistress am I fleeing. That this signifies response and indignation is evident from what has been said. Respecting the indignation, see above at verse 4, where the same words occur. As the face signifies the interiors, as before shown, number 358, so it signifies indignation and other things. 1934. Verse 9. And the angel of Yahuwah said unto her, Return to thy mistress, and humble thyself under her hands. The angel of Yahuwah said, signifies the response of the Lord's interior man. Return to thy mistress, signifies that it was observed that it ought not to trust to itself, but to interior truth and to the affection of it. And humble thyself under her hands, signifies that it ought to compel itself to be under its sovereign power. 1935. The angel of Yahuwah said, that this signifies the response of the Lord's interior man, is evident from the signification of the angel of Yahuwah as being the Lord's interior thought, spoken of above, number 1925. And because it is thought, it is also response. The Lord's interior thought was from the affection of intellectual truth, and this affection was from the divine good itself. Such thought, as before said, never exists in any man, nor can do so. In man also there is interior thought that flows in from the Lord through his internal man into the interior rational, with those who have conscience, as may be seen from the fact that they can observe the evil and falsity in their external man, that is in conflict with the good and truth in the interior man. This thought is much lower, and is not in any way to be compared to that of the Lord, which was from the affection of intellectual truth, and was proper and peculiar to him. But those who have not conscience cannot have interior thought, and therefore there is no conflict, the reason of which is that their rational acts as one and the same with the corporeal sensual. And though there is in them also a continual influx of good and truth from the Lord, yet they have no perception of it, because they forthwith extinguish and suffocate it. And this is why they do not believe any truth of faith. 1936. Return to thy mistress. That this signifies that it was observed that it ought not to trust to itself, but to interior truth and the affection of it, is evident from the signification of her mistress as being the affection of interior truth. But what is specially signified by Sarai as a wife, and by Sarai as a mistress, cannot be described, for it can be grasped by no idea. The things signified are, as before said, above the understanding, even of angels. It is only suggested here how the Lord thought concerning the appearances that had engaged the attention of his first rational, namely, that they were not to be trusted, but divine truths themselves, however incredible these might appear in the view of that rational. For such is the case with all truths divine. If the rational be consulted respecting them, they cannot possibly be believed, for they surpass all its comprehension. For example, that no man, spirit, or angel lives from himself, but the Lord only, and that the life of a man, spirit, or angel is an appearance of life in him. This is repugnant to the rational, which judges from fallacies, but still it is to be believed because it is the truth. It is a truth divine that in every expression of the word, which appears so simple and crude to man, there are things illimitable, nay, more than the universal heaven, and that the arcana which are therein may be presented before the angels by the Lord with perpetual variety to eternity. This is so incredible to the rational that it is unwilling to give it any credence at all, but still it is true. It is a truth divine that no one is ever rewarded in the other life for good deeds if he placed merit in them, or if he did them for the sake of gain, honor, and reputation. Also, that no one is ever punished for evil deeds if he acted from a truly good end. The ends being what are regarded, and from them the deeds. This, too, cannot be believed by the rational. But as it is true, the rational is not to be trusted, for it does not form its conclusions from internal things, but from external things. It is a divine truth that he who aspires to the least joy in the other life receives from the Lord the greatest, and that he who aspires to the greatest has the least. Also, that in celestial joy there is never anything connected with being preeminent over others, and that in proportion as there is this, there is hell. Also, that in celestial glory there is nothing whatever of worldly glory. These things also are repugnant to the rational, but still are to be believed because they are true. It is also a divine truth that the more anyone believes nothing of wisdom to be from himself, the wiser he is. And that the more he believes it to be from himself, and thus the more he attributes prudence to himself, the more insane he is. This also the rational denies, because it supposes that what is not from itself is nothing. There are innumerable such things. From these few examples, it may be seen that the rational is not to be trusted, for the rational is in fallacies and appearances, and it therefore rejects truths that are stripped of fallacies and appearances. And it does this the more it is in the love of self and its cupidities, and the more it is in reasonings, and also in false principles respecting faith. See also the examples adduced above, number 19:11. Humble thyself under her hands. That this signifies that it ought to compel itself to be under its sovereign power is evident without explanation. To humble oneself is expressed in the original tongue by a word which signifies to afflict. That to afflict oneself is, in the internal sense, to compel oneself, may be seen from very many passages in the word, and will be treated of in what follows. That man ought to compel himself to do what is good, to obey the things commanded by the Lord, and to speak truths, which is to humble himself under the Lord's hands, or to submit himself to the sovereign power of the divine good and truth, involves more arcana than can be explained in a few words. There are certain spirits who, during their life in the world, because they had been told that all good is from the Lord and that a man can do nothing of himself, had held it as a principle not to compel themselves in anything, but to cease from all effort, thinking that as the case was so, all effort would be in vain, and therefore they had waited for immediate influx into the effort of their will, and did not compel themselves to do anything good, going so far that when anything evil crept in, as they felt no resistance from within, they resigned themselves to it also, supposing that it was permissible to do so. But these spirits are, as it were, without any proprium, so that they have no determination to anything, and are therefore among the more useless, for they suffer themselves to be led alike by the evil and by the good, and suffer much from the evil. But those who have compelled themselves to resist what is evil and false, although at first they supposed that this was from themselves or from their own power, but were afterwards enlightened to see that their effort was from the Lord, even to the least of all the particulars of the effort, these in the other life cannot be led by evil spirits, but are among the happy. Thus we may see that a man ought to compel himself to do what is good and to speak what is true. The arcanum herein contained is that a man is thus endowed by the Lord with a celestial proprium. For this celestial proprium of man is formed in the effort of his thought. And if he does not maintain this effort by compelling himself, as the appearance is, he certainly does not maintain it by not compelling himself. That we may see how this is, let it be observed that in all self-compulsion to what is good there is a certain freedom, which is not discerned as such while a man is engaged in this self-compulsion, but still it is within. For instance, in one who is willing to undergo the risk of death for the sake of a certain end, or in one who is willing to suffer bodily pain for the sake of health, there is a willingness and thus a certain freedom from which the man acts, although the dangers and the pains while he is in them take away his perception of this willingness or freedom. And such is the case also with those who compel themselves to do what is good. There is a willingness within, and thus a freedom, from which and for the sake of which they compel themselves, that is to say, they do so for the sake of obedience to what the Lord has commanded, and for the sake of the salvation of their souls after death, within which, although the man is not aware of it, there is still more interiorly a regard for the Lord's kingdom, and even for the Lord himself. This is the case most of all during temptations, for in these, when the man compels himself to resist the evil and falsity which are infused and suggested by evil spirits, there is more of freedom than is possible in any state out of temptations, although at the time the man cannot comprehend this. For there is an interior freedom from which he wills to subjugate evil, and which is so great as to equal the force and strength of the evil that is assailing him, for otherwise he could not possibly wage the combat. This freedom is from the Lord, who insinuates it into the man's conscience, and by means of it causes him to overcome the evil as if from his own proprium. Through this freedom man acquires a proprium in which the Lord can work what is good. Without a proprium acquired, that is, given through freedom, no man can possibly be reformed, because he cannot receive the new will, which is conscience. The freedom thus given is the very plane into which there is an influx of good and truth from the Lord. Hence it is that those who in temptations do not resist from their own will or in freedom give way. In all freedom there is man's life, because there is his love. Whatever a man does from love appears to him to be freely done. But in this freedom, when the man is compelling himself to resist what is evil and false and to do what is good, there is celestial love, which the Lord then insinuates and through which he creates the man's proprium. And therefore the Lord wills that it should appear to the man as his, although it is not his. This proprium which a man, during his bodily life, thus receives through what is apparently compulsory, is filled by the Lord in the other life with illimitable delights and felicities. Such persons are also by degrees enlightened to see and even to be confirmed in the truth, that of themselves they have not compelled themselves one atom, but that all things of the effort of their will, even the smallest, had been from the Lord, and that the reason why it had appeared as if it was of themselves was in order that a new will might be given them by the Lord as their own, and that in this way the life of celestial love might be appropriated to them. For the Lord wills to communicate to everyone what is his, and therefore he wills to communicate what is celestial, so that it may appear as the man's and in him, although it is not his. The angels are in such proprium, and in proportion as they are in the truth that all good and truth are from the Lord, they are in the delight and happiness of this proprium. But those who despise and reject all good and truth, and who are willing to believe nothing that is repugnant to their cupidities and reasonings, cannot compel themselves, and thus cannot receive this proprium of conscience or new will. From what has been said above, it is also evident that to compel oneself is not to be compelled, for no good ever comes from compulsion, as when a man is compelled by another man to do what is good. But it is evident that in the case we are now considering, the self-compulsion comes from a certain freedom that is unknown to the man, since from the Lord there is never any compulsion. Hence it is a universal law that everything that is good and true is inseminated in freedom. For otherwise the ground cannot possibly receive and cherish that which is good, and in fact there is no ground in which the seed can grow. Verse 10. And the angel of Yahuwah said unto her, In multiplying I will multiply thy seed, and it shall not be numbered for multitude. The angel of Yahuwah said, signifies the thought of the interior man. In multiplying I will multiply thy seed, signifies the fruitfulness of the rational man when it submits itself to the sovereign control of intellectual truth which is adjoined to good. And it shall not be numbered for multitude, signifies multiplication beyond measure. 1939. The angel of Yahuwah said, that this signifies the thought of the interior man is evident from the preceding verse where the same words occur. 1940. In multiplying, I will multiply thy seed. That this signifies the fruitfulness of the rational man when it submits itself to the sovereign control of the interior man when this is adjoined to good, is evident from the signification of seed as being love and faith, spoken of before, number 1025, 1447, 1610. But in the present case, by multiplying seed is signified the fruitfulness of the celestial things of love in the rational, when the rational has submitted itself to interior or divine truth. Multiplication is predicated of truth and fruitfulness of good, as may be seen from what has already been said and shown, number 43, 55, 913, 983. But as the Lord is here treated of, multiplying signifies becoming fruitful, because all the truth in his rational was made good, and thereby divine, as is here declared concerning him. It is otherwise in man, whose rational is formed by the Lord from truth or the affection of truth. This affection is his good, from which he acts. How the case is with man's rational in regard to multiplication and fruitfulness cannot be understood unless it is known how the case is with influx, of which it may be said in a general way that in every one there is an internal man, a rational man which is intermediate, and an external man, as before said. It is the internal man that is his inmost, from which he is man, and by which he is distinguished from brute animals, which have not such an inmost. And it is, as it were, the door or entrance for the Lord, that is, for what is celestial and spiritual from the Lord into man. What is going on there cannot be comprehended by man, because it is above all his rational, from which he thinks. That rational which appears as man's own is subject to this inmost or to this internal man. And into this rational, through the internal man, therein flow from the Lord the celestial things of love and of faith. And through this rational they inflow into the scientifics that are in the external man. But the things that inflow are received in accordance with the state of each person. Now unless the rational submits itself to the Lord's goods and truths, it either suffocates or rejects or perverts the things that flow in. And this is still more the case when they flow into the sensuous scientifics of the memory. This is what is meant by the seed falling on a highway or upon a rocky place or among thorns, as the Lord teaches, Matthew 13, verses 3 to 7, Mark 4, verses 3 to 7, Luke 8, verses 5 to 7. But when the rational submits itself and believes the Lord, that is his word, the rational is then like good ground or earth, into which the seed falls and bears much fruit. And it shall not be numbered for multitude. That this signifies multiplication beyond measure is evident without explanation. By these words is signified the truth that will thus grow in multitude from good. In the case of the Lord, who in the internal sense is here treated of, these things cannot be fully expressed in words, because in him all things are divine and infinite. And therefore, in order that we may form some idea of how the case is with the multiplication of truth from good, we must speak concerning man. With a man who is in good, that is, in love and charity, the seed that comes from the Lord is made fruitful and multiplied to such an extent that it cannot be numbered for multitude, not so much while he is living in the body, but in the other life to an incredible degree. For so long as a man is living in the body, the seed is in corporeal ground, and is there in the midst of jungles and thickets, which are scientifics and pleasures, and also cares and anxieties. But when these are put off, which is done when he passes into the other life, the seed is freed from them and grows, Just as the seed of a tree springing up from the ground grows into a sapling, then into a great tree, which is afterwards multiplied into a garden of trees. For all science, intelligence, and wisdom, together with their delights and happiness, are thus made fruitful and multiplied, and thereby increased to eternity, and this from the smallest seed, as the Lord teaches respecting the grain of mustard seed. Matthew 13, verse 31. This may be seen very clearly from the science, intelligence, and wisdom of the angels, which, while they were men, had been to them ineffable. verse 11. And the angel of Yehovah said unto her, Behold, thou art with child, and shalt bear a son, and thou shalt call his name Ishmael, because Yehovah hath hearkened to thine affliction. The angel of Yehovah said unto her, signifies the thought of the interior man. Behold, thou art with child, signifies the life of the rational man. And shalt bear a son, signifies the truth of the same. And thou shalt call his name Ishmael, signifies the state of its life. Because Yehovah hath hearkened to thine affliction, signifies while it was submitting itself. 1943. The angel of Yehovah said, that this signifies the thought of the interior man, is evident from what is said above at verses 7, 9, and 10. Behold, thou art with child. That this signifies the life of the rational man is evident from what is said above concerning the conception of this, and from what follows concerning Ishmael, namely that by him is signified the first rational in the Lord. It should be known concerning the rational man in general that it is said to receive life, to be in the womb, and to be born. When the man begins to think that the evil and falsity in himself is that which contradicts and is opposed to truth and good. And still more is this the case when he wills to remove and subdue this evil and falsity. Unless he can perceive and become sensible of this, he has no rational, however much he may imagine that he has. For the rational is the medium that unites the internal man with the external, and thereby perceives from the Lord what is going on in the external man, and reduces the external man to obedience, nay, elevates it from the corporeal and earthly things in which it immerses itself, and causes the man to be man, and to look to heaven to which he belongs by birth, and not as do brute animals, solely to the earth in which he is merely a sojourner, still less to hell. These are the offices of the rational, and therefore a man cannot be said to have any rational unless he is such that he can think in this manner. And whether the rational is coming into existence is known from his life in his use or function. To reason against good and truth, while they are denied at heart, and only known by hearing about them, is not to have a rational. For many can do this who openly rush without any restraint into all wickedness. The only difference is that those who suppose that they have a rational and have it not, maintain a certain decorum in their discourse and act from a pretended honor, in which they are held by external bonds, such as fear of the laws, of the loss of property, of honor, of reputation, and of life. If these bonds, which are external, were to be taken away, some of these men would rave more insanely than those who rush into wickedness without restraint, so that no one can be said to have a rational merely because he can reason. The fact is that those who have no rational usually discourse from things sensual and scientific much more skillfully than those who have it. This is very clearly evident from evil spirits in the other life, who, although accounted as being preeminently rational while they have lived in the body, yet when the external bonds which caused their decorum of discourse and their sham uprightness of life are taken away, as is usual with all in the other life, are more insane than those who in this world are openly so, for they rush into all wickedness without horror, fear, or shame. Not so those who, while they lived in this world, had been rational, for when the external bonds are taken away from them, they are still more sane, because they have had internal bonds, bonds of conscience, by which the Lord kept their thoughts bound to the laws of truth and good, which were their rational principles. And shalt bear a son. That this signifies the truth, namely, of the rational here referred to, which is signified by Ishmael, is evident from the signification of a son as being truth, shown before, Number 264, 489, 491, 533, 1147. This truth is described in the next verse. 1946. And thou shalt call his name Ishmael. This signifies the state of the life. In ancient times, names were bestowed on sons and daughters which were significant of the state in which the parents were, especially the mothers when they conceived, or while they were with child, or when they brought forth, or the state in which the infants were when born, so that the names were significative. From what Ishmael had his name is here explained, namely because Yahuwah hearkened to the affliction, referring to his mother's state. But what Ishmael represents is described in the verse following. 1947. Because Yahuwah hath hearkened to thine affliction. That this signifies while it was submitting itself is evident from what was said above, number 1937. In that to humble and afflict oneself denotes to submit to the sovereign control of the internal man, which submission was there treated of. And it is shown that this is to compel oneself. Also that in compelling oneself there is freedom, that is, what is spontaneous and voluntary, by which compelling oneself is distinguished from being compelled. It was also shown that without this freedom, that is, spontaneity or willingness, man cannot possibly be reformed and receive any celestial proprium. And further, that there is more freedom in temptations than out of them, although the contrary appears to be the case. For the freedom is then stronger in proportion to the assaults of evils and falsities, and is strengthened by the Lord in order that a celestial proprium may be conferred upon the man. And for this reason the Lord is more present with us while we are in temptations. It was shown further that the Lord never compels anyone. For he who is compelled to think what is true and do what is good is not reformed, but thinks falsity and wills evil all the more. All compulsion has this effect, as we may see from the records and examples of life, for from them we know these two things, that consciences do not suffer themselves to be compelled, and that we strive after what is forbidden. Moreover, everyone desires to pass from non-freedom into freedom, for this belongs to man's life. Hence it is evident that anything which is not from freedom, that is, which is not from what is spontaneous or voluntary, is not acceptable to the Lord. For when anyone worships the Lord from what is not free, he worships from nothing that is his own. And in this case, it is the external which moves, that is, which is moved, on account of being compelled, while the internal is null or resistant, or is even contradictory to it. While man is being regenerated, he, from the freedom with which he is endowed by the Lord, exercises self-compulsion, and humbles and even afflicts his rational, in order that it may submit itself. And thereby he receives a celestial proprium, which is afterwards gradually perfected by the Lord, and is made more and more free, so that it becomes the affection of good and thence of truth, and has delight. And in the former and latter affection there is happiness like that of angels. This freedom is what the Lord speaks of in John. The truth makes you free. If the Son make you free, ye are free indeed. 8, verses 32 and 36. The nature of this freedom is utterly unknown to those who do not possess conscience, for they make freedom consist in doing as they please, and in the license of thinking and speaking what is false, of willing and doing what is evil, and of not compelling and humbling, still less of afflicting such desires, when yet the very reverse is the case, as the Lord also teaches in the same gospel. Everyone that committeth sin is the servant of sin. 8, verse 34. This slavish freedom they receive from the infernal spirits who are with them, and to infuse it. And when they are in the life of these spirits, they are also in their loves and cupidities, and an impure and excrementitious delight breathes upon them. And when they are being, as it were, carried away by the torrent, they suppose themselves to be in freedom, but it is an infernal freedom. The difference between this infernal freedom and celestial freedom is that the one is that of death and drags them down to hell, while the other, or celestial freedom, is of life and uplifts them to heaven. That all true internal worship comes from freedom and none from compulsion, and that if worship is not from freedom, it is not internal worship, is evident from the word, as from the sacrifices that were free will offerings or vows, or offerings of peace or of thanksgiving, which were called gifts and offerings, concerning which see Numbers 15, verses 3, etc., Deuteronomy 12, verse 6, 16, verses 10 and 11, 23, verses 23 and 24. So in David, with a free will offering will I sacrifice unto thee. I will confess to thy name, O Yehovah, for it is good. Psalm 54, verse 6. So again, from the contribution or collection which they were to make for the tabernacle and for the garments of holiness spoken of in Moses, speak unto the sons of Israel, and let them take for me an offering. From every man whom his heart impels willingly, ye shall take my offering. Exodus 25, verse 2. And again, whosoever is of a willing heart, let him bring it, Yehovah's offering. Exodus 35, verse 5. Moreover, the humiliation of the rational man, or its affliction, from freedom, as before said, was also represented by the affliction of souls on days of solemnity, as mentioned in Moses. It shall be a statute of eternity unto you. In the seventh month, on the tenth of the month, ye shall afflict your souls. Leviticus 16, verse 29. And again, on the tenth of the seventh month, this is the day of expiations. There shall be a holy convocation unto you, and ye shall afflict your souls. Every soul that shall not have afflicted itself in that same day shall be cut off from his peoples. Leviticus 23, verses 27 and 29. It was for this reason that the unleavened bread, in which there was nothing fermented, is called the bread of affliction. Deuteronomy 16, verses 2 and 3. Affliction is thus spoken of in David. Yahuwah, who shall sojourn in thy tabernacle? Who shall dwell in the mountain of thy holiness? He that walketh uprightly and worketh justice, he that sweareth to afflict himself and changeth not. Psalm 15, verses 1, 2, and 4. That affliction denotes the mastering and subduing of the evils and falsities that rise up from the external man into the rational may be seen from what has been said. Thus affliction does not mean that we should plunge ourselves into poverty and wretchedness, or that we should renounce all bodily delights. For in this way, evil is not mastered and subdued, and moreover, some other evil may be aroused, namely, a sense of merit on account of the renunciation. And besides, man's freedom suffers, in which alone, as in ground, the good and truth of faith can be inseminated. Concerning affliction, as denoting also temptation, see above, number 1846. Verse 12. And he shall be a wild ass man, his hand against all, and the hand of all against him, and he shall dwell against the faces of all his brethren. He shall be a wild ass man, signifies rational truth, which is described. His hand against all signifies that it will wage war upon whatever is not true. And the hand of all against him signifies that falsities will fight back. And he shall dwell against the faces of all his brethren, signifies that there will be continual contentions about matters of faith, but that nevertheless it will be the conqueror. He shall be a wild ass man. That this signifies rational truth, which is described, is evident from the signification of a wild ass as being rational truth. In the word, there is frequent mention of horses, horsemen, mules, and asses. And as yet, no one has known that these signify things intellectual, rational, and scientific. That these animals and their riders have such a signification will of the Lord's divine mercy be fully confirmed in the proper places. Of the same class is the onager, for this is the mule of the wilderness, or wild ass, and it signifies man's rational. Not, however, the rational in its whole complex, but only rational truth. The rational consists of good and truth, that is, of things belonging to charity and of things belonging to faith. And it is rational truth that is signified by the wild ass. This, then, is what is represented by Ishmael, and is what is described in this verse. It seems incredible that rational truth, when separated from good, should be of such a character. Neither should I have known this to be the case unless I had been instructed by living experience. Whether you say rational truth or the man whose rational is of this kind amounts to the same. The man whose rational is of such a character that he is solely in truth, even though it be the truth of faith, and who is not at the same time in the good of charity, is altogether of such a character. He is a morose man, will bear nothing, is against all, regards everybody as being in falsity, is ready to rebuke, to chastise, and to punish, has no pity, and does not apply or adapt himself to others and study to bend their minds. For he looks at everything from truth, and nothing from good. Hence it is that Ishmael was driven out, and afterwards dwelt in the wilderness. And his mother took him a wife out of the land of Egypt. Genesis 21, verses 9 to 21. All of which things are representative of one who is endowed with such a rational. Mention is made of wild asses in the prophetical parts of the word, as in Isaiah. The palace shall be forsaken, the multitude of the city shall be deserted. The high place and the watchtower shall be for dens, even forever a joy of wild asses, a pasture of flocks. 32, verse 14. Here the devastation of intellectual things is treated of, which, when laid waste as regards truths, are called a joy of wild asses, and when as regards goods, a pasture of flocks, so that there is no rational. In Jeremiah, the wild asses stood upon the hills. They snuffed up the wind like sea monsters. Their eyes perished because there was no herbage. 14, verse 6. Here the subject treated of is drought, that is, the absence of what is good and true. It is said of the wild asses that they snuff up the wind, when empty things are seized on instead of real things, which are truths. Their eyes perished means that there is no apprehension of what truth is. In Hosea, for they have gone up to Assyria, a wild ass alone by himself. Ephraim hath sought loves with a harlot's hire. 8, verse 9. Here Israel, or the spiritual church, is treated of. Ephraim denotes its intellectual. Going up into Assyria, reasoning about truth, as to whether it is truth. The solitary wild ass, the rational thus destitute of truths. In the same. For he shall be among his brethren as a wild ass. An east wind shall come, the wind of Yahuwah coming up from the wilderness. And his spring shall become dry, and his fountain shall be dried up. He shall make a spoil of the treasure of all vessels of desire. 13, verse 15. This is said of Ephraim, by whom is signified the intellectual of the spiritual church, whose rational is as a wild ass, and the destruction of which is here treated of. In David, Yahuwah God shall send forth springs into rivers. They shall run among the mountains. They shall supply drink to every beast of the fields. The wild asses shall quench their thirst. Psalm 104, verses 10 and 11. Springs denote cognitions. The beasts of the fields, goods. The wild asses, the truths of reason.